back to Political Misfits on Radio Sputnik, where we bring you news, politics, and culture without the red and blue treatment. I'm Ben Zinovich, here with Michelle Witte. Well, I'm on my my mobile Twitter.
Oh, no.
Because it's what is working for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading a CNN headline right now. Which, if I open the link, it also doesn't work. I feel like I'm basically living on one leg. It says Pete Buttigieg starts to rethink how he does his job in wake of Ohio train disaster.
Yes, of course. I saw that. Yeah, it is
pretty
funny.
Pete Buttigieg admits he got it wrong in the Ohio train derailment response in an interview. He should have gone to the East Palestine earlier and failed to anticipate the political fallout from the toxic train derailment. So, I mean, I think this sort of gets into the what we want to discuss with our next guest about just this sort of lackadaisical approach to something that has, you know, environmental degradation consequences, but also resolve around the issue of like labor rights. I mean, we've obviously followed
this for a while. And
public health. Public health, of course, yes. Yeah. A lot of these just sort of interweave. But yeah, basically, we wanted to get a little deeper into this idea of forever chemicals. People, for those that don't know, there's this idea or this sort of that's the descriptor for what are PFAS, which is polyfluoroalkyl substances. They're pretty widespread. They don't degrade in the environment, and they've been around for decades. That you may have seen them in or felt them, gotten there sort of.
100% you have encountered them in your life in places you never would have expected. There was a story in, I think, the Washington Post or the New York Times a couple months ago about these people who moved up to Maine to do a hobby farm and then discovered that actually nothing they grew should really be sold because unbeknownst to them, the soil had been contaminated through this sort of state-run program to distribute human waste and other chemicals there. So yeah, it's these chemicals that are incredibly prevalent in the environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was at a recent demonstration here in DC about these that was led by a bunch of different, there was former firefighters that were dealing with the consequences as well as, families that live near the Red Hill
fuel depot in
Hawaii. They were all calling for more implementation, sort of regulations around PFAS chemicals. But for all that, we wanted to get into it with Guy McPherson, who is a scientist, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. So welcome back, Guy.
Thank you, Ben and Michelle. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Always a pleasure with you. Let's give us a rundown of what PFAS are, or forever chemicals, and what their actual risk is. What are the dangers that they present, and to those, to the environment, but also to those who come into contact with them?
Well, the chemicals themselves are described by their common name, forever chemicals. They last a really, really long time in the environment. They are stunningly difficult to deal with, to clean up in any way, and they're expensive to deal with. You know, and that's what the expense results from, the difficulty in cleaning them up. The dangers have long been known. It is long past time to address the risks associated with PFAS chemicals. We discussed this issue on this show nearly a year ago on April 13th, 2022, and we focused specifically on that Maine hobby farm. Well, that's about a century ago. The United States federal government has acted with typically glacial speed. When we knew about PFAS were dangerous to human health in the 1920s, obviously, the expression about glacial speed came about before glaciers began melting at their current rate. But the United States federal government continues to act very slowly in response to this information we've had for a century. More recently, Harvard University School of Public Health reported in 2018 that these chemicals, quote, may pose much greater health risks than previously thought, end quote. Quoting a recent review conducted by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recent meaning about 5 years ago, health effects from PFAS exposure include cancer, liver damage, decreased fertility, and increased rate of asthma and thyroid disease. A June 20th, 2018 article from ProPublica noted that the CDC report recommends an exposure limit for one of the PFAS compounds that is 10 times lower than the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's current limit. Now, in this country, we pride ourselves on our ability to take significant actions in the face of great danger. Consider the stories I've heard since I was a child, and you've probably heard similar stories, about our actions during World War II, our campaign against terrorists, and how we lead the world in our response to issues such as environmental protection and social justice. I continue still to hear about our response to threats such as contaminated air and water. The United States led the way with passage of the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, and numerous other pieces of important legislation in the 1970s. Then and now, we could use the financial bully pulpit to promote actions that would improve the lives of billions of people. Yes, billions. Will we act? In this country, we generally demonstrate leadership on important issues only when doing so benefits a billionaire or two. I'm sorry to say that I suspect this time will be no different, that until we come up with a solution of some kind that directly benefits a billionaire or two, I think we're going to continue to see little or no action from the United States federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are certain areas. I'm reading a NBC News Center Maine report saying that the Maine EPA is expected to receive millions of dollars in funding from the U.S. government to address these contaminants to the tune of $18.914 million. And so I guess, is it something that really, with these sorts of existential threats, how do we put a price tag on it? And is this sort of, I see also a lot of stuff centering around like, oh, this is going to be take a big hit to the budget or whatever. What do you make of this sort of price tagging environmental threats, I guess? Can we even conceive of it as sort of a sort of deficit question when it has such the light cost of life is just
how do you make this a calculation and put like a, you know, one sum on one side and one sum on the other?
That's what we do. That we attach monetary value to every single thing. That's what we do in this country. That's all I've known my entire life. And I'm 6,000 years old, plus or minus a few years. As you know, addressing this issue, this PFAS issue, is very expensive. Nationally, it would cost about $38 billion to remove enough of the chemicals to meet the recent strict Environmental Protection Agency rule that limits PFAS to the point that they cannot be detected. $38 billion is a lot of money. But wait. A week ago, President Biden signed a $40 billion bill. $40 billion. He signed that bill to help Ukraine. Far be it for me to point out that military actions benefit wealthy people and the companies they own. However, the $38 billion required to remove enough of the forever chemicals to meet the recent Environmental Protection Agency rule is less than 2% of the 2022 federal budget. In other words, $38 billion is a lot of money to you and me, but it doesn't seem to be a lot of money to the warmongers who allegedly run this country, as exhibited by where they're throwing the money around these days.
I also wanted to ask Guy about this sense that we are really playing catch up on PFAS, right? Like, oh gosh, I guess we should have some limits on these and maybe we should have studied these a little more. And I just wonder about, you know, I wonder about the U.S. practices to sort of support and facilitate industry, right? I mean, Ben and I have talked on this show about some of the provisions in Biden's new subsidies and other legislative acts that are intended to promote the development of alternatives to fossil fuel. And so these are presented as like, we're going to streamline the process so these companies can, you know, get to making things faster and we can phase out cars. But part of the streamlining process is eliminating some of these regulations. And I'm thinking of, I mean, this is maybe unrelated, but I think it illustrates my point. We talked about lab-grown meat a while back and how it seems like the United States is a country where the biggest factory is going to be put, that lab-grown meat is sort of going to they're trying to scale it up and make it actually marketable. And I think one of the reasons is probably because we have lacks regulation compared to, say, Europe. And it seems to me that this is probably why we're always playing catch up on these things. And so I wanted to ask, you know, does the regulatory environment here, I guess, differ a great deal from that in Europe, where, yes, industry may be slowed down, but also you don't discover 10 years, 20 years, 50 years after the fact that you've accidentally contaminated your landscape with a chemical that you weren't aware of before? And, you know, when we're talking about streamlining and promoting industry, it seems to, you know, rely a lot on these industries policing themselves. And clearly they're not going to do that.
Right. You know, this brings up a critical point that I think the billionaires and government agencies and government individuals are dealing with right now. How do we keep generating money and funneling it to the billionaires while maintaining a habitable planet for human animals? So this is difficult. And you know, my cynicism jumps to the fore here occasionally. Western Europe faces similar issues to those in this country when it comes to these chemicals. There's about 17,000 contaminated sites in the UK and Europe. In response, on February 7th, 2023, so a month ago, the European Chemicals Agency published its long-awaited restriction proposal on PFAS. Following years of controversy, the proposal sets out the pathway for the EU to ban the production and import of the family of more than 10,000 persistent chemicals. So the European Union waited a long time to address this issue, but they're still ahead of the United States. It's expensive. It's difficult. We are so addicted to money in this country, at least it seems to me, from the perspective of the government. If we can't use it to make money for a billionaire, to funnel money to one or a few individuals, then it seems like we're just not interested. And I don't even know how you can say that when we're talking about existential issues such as climate change and forever chemicals. Gah. And yet I see it happening all the time. People arguing about the most insignificant details instead of getting to the point. You know, in what was called the special period when the Soviet Union collapsed, Cuba lost a huge amount of support, right? Including access to fossil fuels. So immediately, they transitioned so that their entire educational system was based on two items, public health and growing and distributing food. Now, I guess all we really need in this country is a benevolent dictator instead of the fascist government we currently have. And maybe we could go down that route. But it's astonishing that a small country such as Cuba can make these huge changes in the lifestyles of everybody in the country, essentially overnight, and a so-called rich country like the United States can't do a damn thing about anything that seems to matter.
Yeah, I know that in that same special period, 1.2 million bicycles were purchased from China and distributed. It wasn't necessarily like a how do we get more fossil fuels? It's how do we transition and have a place that's both efficient, more healthy, all that. Cuba is, of course, a country with a 100-year plan on climate resiliency, which I encourage other people to read up about. Because yes, of course, this is a country that is poor, is sanctioned, is blockaded, but is still able to carry out changes that benefit a greater majority. I guess also I wanted to talk to you, Guy, about this claim that PFAS chemicals are really not in use these days, having been phased out or whatever, maybe perhaps within the consumer market. But one of the pervasive sources of PFAS contamination is the U.S. military. The Environmental Working Group reports that there are around 710 military sites across the country and among U.S. territories that contain confirmed or suspected discharges of PFAS. We mentioned Red Hill earlier, but so what does the military play in this contamination? What role does it play in this contamination, perhaps in climate change as a whole? And why, I guess, in your mind, is the U.S. military, why is it always exempt from a lot of major climate regulations?
Wait, I have to jump in here because we've just asked Guy a really long question and he's going to have like 30 seconds
yes,
to
apologies.
Answer this. So Guy, what I hope is that you can stay with us after we hit this hard break at 1 p.m. and then we'll get your answer. But yeah, I mean, PFAS are not unlike other contaminants in the sense that the U.S. military is responsible for quite a lot of it and quite a lot of it outside the U.S. borders. I mean, we've got the leaking nuclear coffin in the Pacific that every 5 years people get a little bit uncomfortable with. We have Red Hill, of course, which is fuel. And so, yeah, I want to see, you know, what you make of this and how we can have this sort of huge blind spot when it comes to environmental regulation. But we will get to that after this quick break. We're talking to scientist Guy McPherson. You're listening to Political Misfits. We're on Radio Sputnik. We're live in DC, and we'll be right back.
Political Misfits on Radio Sputnik, where we bring you news, politics, and culture without the red and blue treatment. I'm Ben Zinovich, here with Michelle Witte. We were just finishing up with Guy McPherson, who's a scientist, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology, and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. We were just discussing the sort of phasing out of PFAS chemicals and the U.S.'s military, the U.S. military's exemption from a lot of these regulations historically with regards to chemical contamination, but also climate regulations. So we just wanted to, of course, get your take on that, Guy.
Well, first, there's this claim that PFAS chemicals are largely not in use these days. Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Largely not in use? I mean, some PFAS chemicals have been phased out, but others have not. In addition, simply eliminating future sales of items with PFAS chemicals does nothing to clean up hundreds of thousands of pans covered with Teflon, thousands of wells drilled into contaminated water, and thousands of piles of dirt loaded with these chemicals. And you brought up the military. As usual in this country, the military gets a free ride. Mere mention of holding the military to the same standards as the rest of us leads directly to cries that one is at best unpatriotic and probably a traitor. But any unbiased assessment will show that the military leads the way in research and development of many sources of contamination and the attendant declines in human health. Who created nuclear weapons? What country used them? Who continues to use depleted uranium as a weapon of war? Who is the largest user of fossil fuels in the world? I mean, these all point to the importance of the United States military and the neglect of the United States military in dealing with incredibly important issues, including existential threats, and obviously including these forever chemicals.
Yeah, of course. I think like the imagery just out of Operation Desert Storm is sort of this Mad Max style climate Armageddon style thing. You can't really expect the U.S. military to have any sort of progressive green initiative to come out of it. But again, that was Guy McPherson. He's a scientist.
Wait. Can I just interrupt here?
You know,
the U.S. military seems to be exempt from many regulations, including climate regulations. And I just want to comment on that for about a minute and a half, if you can spare the time. Great. Thank you. Southwestern American writer Edward Abbey has a quote that I like so much. It's on a T-shirt I've worn to the point of being thin and full of holes. And here's the quote. A patriot must be ready to defend his country against his government. Comedian George Carlin had something relevant to say as well. Quote, I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. End quote. The U.S. military is the number one producer of greenhouse gas emissions in the world. I would argue that the U.S. military is exempt not only from relevant climate regulations, but also from other legislation intent upon keeping the world safe for all of us. In the rare cases, the military somehow has not managed to get a free ride. It's close. They get a ride that's almost free. Sadly, almost nobody even looks. If you don't look, you won't see it. If you need a few examples of what happens to people who call out the U.S. military and those who give the military its wrongful orders, you need only look as far as Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, Julian Assange, and a little closer to home, John Kiriakou. What we've done in this country, what we have allowed to be done in the name of the military and the government is absolutely appalling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Guy. Guy McPherson is a scientist, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll be back in touch again. We're going to turn now to a bunch of domestic stories that we haven't gotten to yet, including some fun legal questions. We have reports of a previously unknown